Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, and welcome to the FTM Midwest Money Transfer conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. If you would like to ask a question at any time during today's conference, please press star one on your touchtone telephone. And now, I would like to turn the conference over to your moderator, Mr. Kartha Mehta. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Anthony. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the FTN Midwest Money conference call. Today we have Dilip Bratta. He is an economist for the World Bank. He has conducted extensive research regarding the money transfer industry. In fact, he has written numerous articles about the subject matter and co-authored several books. I'll turn the conference call over to Dilip so he can provide a little bit more background about himself for all the participants on the call. Dilip?
Yes, Karthik, thank you. Karthik, you said, I'm Dilip Bratta from the World Bank. I'm an economist. I work on the issue of remittances for about 6 years now. The main source of official data on remittances is the IMF Balance of Payments, and we sort of, in my team, put together the headline data that you see, the 240 billion or whatever, 300 billion data that you see is our data. And just to kick off the substantive part of this session, I wanted to mention that we have just last night come up with some new data that became available since our last remittance estimates for 2007. According to the newly available data, remittance flows to developing countries amounted to 251 billion in 2007. That compares with 240 billion that we had in our earlier estimate. So compared to 2006, in 2007, remittances were up by 11% on a year-on-year basis. These are remittance flows to developing countries, and these are officially recorded data. When you include the flows that are not recorded, because either there is a threshold requirement because these flows fall below the formal threshold for reporting, or because these flows are going through the informal channels. The unrecorded flows through both formal and informal channels are also believed to be sizable, especially in some corridors, especially in Africa and in the poorer countries. So the true size of remittance flows to developing countries is about 300 billion or much larger than that. Actually, it could be 300 or 350 billion. And the global remittance flows, that includes developed countries as well, in 2007, as officially recorded, was 337 billion. That's up from the earlier estimate by about 5%.
Dilip, thank you. Maybe if we could just extend that conversation a little bit more. Yeah, you had said that obviously when you add in the informal money transfer, the market is much larger, and you gave a brief preview of Africa being one of those corridors. Maybe if you could, from your opinion, which corridors have the largest informal money transfer amounts?
The use of informal channels is mostly because of problems or inconveniences or high costs in the formal channels. What that means is that where the formal channels are more developed, the size of informal flows are low. Those corridors where the size of informal flows are low and most of the flows are going through the formal channel are U.S. to Mexico and the Philippines, flows to Philippines from most of the countries, and these days, to a large extent, flows to India as well, are mostly through formal channels. Although India is definitely not in the same league as Mexico or the Philippines. On the other hand, Africa, most of the flows to Africa are actually believed to be informal through the informal channels. So in the France to Comoros, Comoros is a small country, so it's a small corridor, but, you know, it's just an example. France to Comoros, it is believed that almost all the flows are through informal channels and nothing is recorded. I also wanted to point out that, you know, unrecorded flows also involve formal channels. And another way of putting it is that not all flows are, not all unrecorded flows are illegal. Or there is, you know, so we should be very careful about, you know, using the term illegal or illegal channel or alternative remittance channels. The reason I want to mention that is that Canada has no data, no official data on either outward remittance flows or inward remittance flows, which basically underestimates the remittance and data significantly, as we officially reported.
Okay. Bill, thank you. So that is helpful. So maybe just so I understand it, for clarification purposes, India is probably one of the largest money transfer markets. Are there any estimates, or have you estimated in that market what might be formal and what might be informal? And informal would be, in my opinion, those remittances that are not done by regulated companies.
Estimate of informal flows to India or for most countries are just not available. And as you know, Indian, there is some association, I mean, let me preface this by saying that there is some association between informal flows and undocumented workers. I don't use the word illegal workers, but, you know, undocumented workers. And as you know, most Indians, Indian migrants are documented, so they don't need to send money through informal channels. It used to be very, very big in the past when there were exchange controls in India, but informal flows in the recent years are believed to have gone down significantly because there is no foreign exchange premium in the Indian market. However, there are still restrictions on outward remittances from India for whatever purposes, tourism, tuition payment, or for, you know, simply to pay for imports. And because of that, I suspect that there is a bit of the hawala transaction still going on to circumvent the outward remittance flows. The restrictions on outward remittance flows. So I cannot answer your question. What is the true the extent of the unrecorded flows in India compared to the recorded flows? But it should be significant. We know that the data recent data suggests that India received $27 billion in 2007. I suspect that the market is more like, you know, $35 billion or so.
Thank you, Dilip. Maybe we could talk about your expectations for growth in this market over the next 2 years. You indicated the most recent data seems to indicate about 11% growth year over year. So I wanted to get your thoughts maybe on projections for growth over the next couple years.
I don't think the flows, global remittance flows, or flows from, you know, flows of remittances to developing countries are slowing too much. They are definitely not negative. This is what, you know, we just found in the latest data that in 2007 remittances grew by 11%. You know, that's solid double-digit growth. In any industry, one should be proud of that. That does look like a slowdown compared to, you know, the years 2002 or 2003, when there were there was more scrutiny of these flows and there was more awareness of these flows, and with more awareness of remittances as a market opportunity or as a development issue, many central banks started publishing data. So we are still seeing a lot of new countries reporting data, and in fact, many countries which used to have very some extent of under-reporting in their data, they are coming up with, you know, higher numbers. To give you an example, Bangladesh, I think in the latest month, we had a year-on-year growth of about 80% in Bangladesh figure. And, you know, this is surprising. We have seen such tripling, quadrupling of remittance data over a period of 3 or 4 years in many countries. And these days we are seeing it mostly out of Latin America. In Latin America, remittance flows are slowing outside Latin America, especially from the Gulf region to East Asia and South Asia. Remittances are booming, and I suspect to Africa as well. So what do I expect in terms of growth rate for the next 2 years? I would give you a minimum count as opposed to my best estimate, and the minimum would be about 11%. I think it's about the same rate as last year. The reason I say minimum is because I think in later in the year, let's say in November, when we revisit the data again, we will find that many countries have revised their remittance data upwards, and many new countries would have reported data as well. Remember that we are still waiting for Canadian data, by the way, that may not be available for years to come. The reason I expect double-digit growth in the low teens, let's say, or about 11-12% growth a year is because the international migrant stock, the global migrant stock, is increasing at a rate of about 3-4% a year. And incomes are rising at a clip of about 3-4% in the source country and in the recipient countries. And in nominal terms, incomes are growing even faster. You see, the rate of inflation is about, 4-5% globally. And income growth in real terms is about 3-4% or even 5% globally. So if you put all these things together, these are the three factors that drive remittance growth. I expect remittances to grow in the range of 10-12% over the next couple of years. And that's not my forecast. That's my minimum. I mean, I think it will exceed that.
So maybe, what do you think the potential impact of an economic slowdown could be? It seems at this point in time we haven't really seen that much of an impact on
the
choosing economy.
The impact of economic slowdown, especially in the U.S., on remittance flows to Mexico is a headline-grabbing material. So you see a lot of news on that. According to the latest data, as you know, remittances actually fell about 3% compared to last year. This is remittances to Mexico. Now, when you plot remittances on a monthly basis to Mexico, it's very hard to see that there is a significant decline. You know, a 1% decline or 2% decline is not a big deal, as you can imagine, especially when remittances more than doubled in Mexico between 2002 and now. Because remittances are coming off a high base and because of two other reasons which I'm going to mention, we are seeing a flattening of remittances compared to last year in the officially recorded data. What do I believe to be the true remittance flows to Mexico? I actually believe that true remittance flows to Mexico might be actually increasing at a small rate of 3 or 5%, or maybe even a little more, because we keep seeing similar increases on a year-on-year basis to El Salvador, to Honduras, to Guatemala. I don't see why it should be any different for Mexico. The two other reasons why I think the true size of flows might be increasing, whereas the picture is different when you look at officially recorded data, which shows a slight decline. The two reasons would be that there is probably a shift in flows to informal channels because of what you mentioned, partly the economic slowdown, which has caused definitely some layoffs, at least in the construction sector, of Mexican migrants. And when people get laid off, they don't really immediately stop sending remittances. they continue to send remittances, but probably through unofficial channels. And, of course, they combine that with the other factor, which is the enforcement of immigration regulations, especially on employers, that might have also caused remittances to go underground. In other words, what I am saying is we are probably seeing a reversal of the trend, the shift that we saw from informal to formal in the post-911 world. We are seeing a bit of the reversal of that. Now, this time, flows going from formal to informal because of other restrictions and immigration enforcement on the market. So in the Mexico corridor, I actually don't believe that remittances are declining. They are flattening and they are slowing because of the high base of which they are coming off. In the other corridors in Latin America, there is a slowdown compared to before, and the numbers are more in the range of the year-on-year growth rates are more in the range of 8 to 12%. But in East Asia and in South Asia, remittances are booming. Philippines is about 15% growth. In India, I think it would be, again, a double-digit growth. In Pakistan, in Bangladesh, remittances are going through the roof. And in Africa, we don't have numbers, but I suspect the numbers are huge.
I wanted to move a little bit to pricing and maybe what you believe has happened to pricing maybe worldwide, and you can take it by quarter if that's easier, and what you anticipate will happen to pricing for money transfers over the next 12 to 18 months?
Pricing in the more liquid corridors, so the large corridors, has fallen, actually. I wanted to say that they have fallen, and I don't know if they will fall any further. Again, the example would be U.S. to Mexico, where remittance costs fell by 60% or so, close to 60% between 1999 and 2004. And since then, they have kind of stabilized. And, you know, the numbers were like in 1999, average remittance cost was like $29 or so. And then these days, we are seeing the number at about $10 to send the average remittances, which is about $350 to $400 in the case of Mexico. I don't see a significant decline in remittance costs in other corridors which are not very liquid. And the reason, and this is more anecdotal. We don't have the data on all the countries, but, you know, I have just gotten back from a tour of Africa. I was in Kenya. I was in South Africa. My colleagues were in six other countries. And I didn't see, also I was in Europe where I've been checking the remittance cost. I didn't see much of a change in the remittance fees last year, in the recent years. Two reasons why remittance costs are not falling as much as they probably should. One is that the top money transfer companies have been able to establish exclusive partnerships with major networks like postal networks and banks that have extensive networks. So they have the market share and they have the pricing power. And again, we have seen that they have been able to sometimes negotiate a lower agency fee or commission rate to the agents on both sides, on the origin side and the destination side. So remittance costs have not fallen that much. They're able to keep the prices up. The other reason is that introduction of more efficient technology like cell phone remittances or even card-based remittances, technology-based remittances that are impersonal in a way, and because of that they're more efficient, that kind of remittances have been affected by the stringent application or interpretation of the anti-money laundering and the countering of the financing of terrorism regulations. And that is definitely hurting cross-border remittances using internet mobile phones or even cards, dual, you know, stored value cards.
So, if, on the on your first point, do you believe we will see a change in the network agent relationships that some of these larger money transfer companies have with their agents, or do you believe that the what's in place now will stay in place at least for the foreseeable future?
There is an awareness on the part of the public networks, like the post offices, postal networks, and in some cases the commercial banking networks, that exclusivity contracts are probably hurting their own people. And the policy inconsistency that is involved in these exclusive partnerships is also being highlighted in many public discussions, in public forums. For example, most countries don't tax remittances because these are foreign currency flows and countries want to attract foreign currency flows. And also there is a reason that, you know, the source of the income from which remittances came has probably already been taxed in the destination country for the migrant. Migrant has already paid the taxes, income taxes already, so why would the person again pay a tax on remittances when the remittances are going to the family member? That's a sort of interpretation for on the basis of which most countries do not tax remittances. On the other hand, if a post office actually accepts a fee for delivering remittance services, then that is actually a tax on the remittance recipient. So countries are beginning to recognize that kind of inconsistency. And that would mean, I think, that exclusive partnerships will sort of weaken and give way to more shared partnerships. So postal networks of a country might say, okay, we want to partner with you, the money transfer company, and the other one, the money transfer company, and we might want to have our own network as well. So that's going to happen. And that would actually put downward pressure on remittances, remittance prices, pricing. But again, many of the post offices and other players are already in an exclusive legal contract. And they would be bound by that for the foreseeable future. So I don't think that you will see a lot of changes in the next 2 years. In the three-year period, maybe.
Philip, I wanted to maybe talk a little bit about your second point and new technologies. There's been a lot of talk about utilizing cell phones, utilizing ATM cards, credit cards. A, do you believe that this has gained really any traction? And B, you know, which technology, if any of those, do you think has the best opportunity for succeeding?
I want to make one point before I get to this point. This is about the pricing and your other point about expected growth of this market. I just want to make that point, and then I'll move to this your question. The quick point I wanted to make is that, you know, you are seeing this trade-off between falling prices and rising volume. I expect the volume to grow, volume of remittances to grow, but the pricing to kind of at least not rise, but probably fall. It is not too fast, but it will fall. This trade-off, the key question is which one rises faster and which one is falling faster. And the price elasticity of remittances, we believe, is I guess the word is larger than one, meaning that the volume effect will dominate. That's what I want to say. So even if prices fall, profits would rise. That's an important point I wanted to make. Now on to the point about cell phone-based technology and how much traction there is for this technology. I feel that, you know, we saw a demonstration of the M-Pesa in Nairobi. And I was really, really impressed. Everyone has it. The popularity of the cell phone company has grown dramatically because now they are providing also the money transfer facility. And what is really remarkable is the pricing. It has really been commoditized in a way that remittance transactions of even $10 or even $5 per transaction is now possible, and people are doing it. And the fee for that is about 50 cents. And yet, because prices have fallen, people are sending money more often in smaller amounts. So we actually saw, this is the first time I saw this demonstration or some data on this in my life, and I've been looking for it. This relates to the point about cost elasticity or price elasticity of remittance volume as well. But for the first time I saw that average remittance amount is actually falling on a quarter-on-quarter basis. And that's what I would expect logically, that as remittance costs become cheaper, people would de-bundle, the opposite of bundling, that you know, if you have to pay a high price for let's say sending up to $1,000 the same price, then you would like to max it out. So you would like to bundle it and wait until you have $1,000, so your percent cost goes down. If the cost falls, you see the opposite of that. So a lot of people are sending smaller amounts, and a lot of poor people who were earlier not able to send the money, imagine what they were doing with the money. If they couldn't send the money and they don't have a bank account and they don't want to put the money under the mattress, they eat it. So if now they can send money for a cheaper price, they would do it. And you see that in Kenya in a big way in the experience of M-Pesa. I don't think that has got traction when it comes to cross-border remittances because of the AML-CFT. AML-CFT considerations have blocked the expansion of that M-Pesa model to international transfers so far. Now, there is increasing awareness out there that remittances are pro-poor, remittances go to very poor people, reduce poverty, they do a lot of good things. You know, households that receive remittances have children with higher birth weights. I mean, such kind of data are coming out, and that is giving the development type, the poverty reduction type types in the policy circles a bit of upper hand compared to the security types. There is also a realization that remittance transactions are very simple, that they don't involve the complexities associated with that are associated with banking transactions like deposit taking or loan making, and therefore remittance transactions should be simple. So banking regulations that were being applied earlier to remittance companies are also being diluted a bit. So there is a move, there is an awareness in the policy circle about the potential of the M-Pesa type cell phone based remittance model, and also an awareness that the regulation is probably beginning to hurt. But so far, the domestic remittance the mobile phone remittances have been much more popular, prevalent in the domestic remittance market, not so much in the cross-border. And I suspect that problem will be there for at least I would say even 2 years to be on the safe side. But what I do see, and maybe it's a hope, in 3 years' time, we probably will see mobile remittances in the U.S. It will be nice to see it earlier, but that might mean major political changes.
If you look, Dilip, and look at some legislative or any political issues, you talked about not taxing the remittance market. But as the economies falter and maybe as governments look for additional tax revenue, is that a possibility at all, or are there, I guess, any other changes out there legislatively which may hurt or help the growth of the money transfer market?
Some countries are thinking about it, but only a handful of countries are thinking about taxing remittances. And I don't think they will be able to do it, implement it. And if they were able to implement it, money would go underground So I think policymakers are unlikely to tax remittances in any country. They are talking about it, but I don't think they will actually implement it. Remember that the times now, the fiscal situation in most countries in the world now, yeah, is a little worse now than last year or the year before, but it is much better now than last decade. And even in the last decade, they were not taxing remittances. So I don't think that's a serious threat.
Anthony, would you just once again just repeat, if anybody in the audience does have a question, what the procedure is?
Yes, sir. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question for today's conference, please press star 1 at this time, star 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please turn your speaker function off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. It looks like we do have one question from Michael Cohen with the Sanovia Capital.
Hi, Kartek. Thanks for hosting the call. Hi, we really appreciate it. Could you talk about sort of specific, as you guys sort of look at different countries and specific corridors where you think there might be potential for sort of outsized growth?
Outsized growth. In the domestic market in China and India, there is definitely going to be extraordinary growth. The remittances are already flowing, so it's not in the remittances itself, but the use of formal money transfer operators would grow in the large countries for domestic remittances. Cross-border, I think flows from the Gulf region to Asia will continue to surprise us. It will continue to the data will continue to surprise us because of two factors. One is that the currencies in those countries are appreciating. For example, the currencies in India and the Philippines are appreciating compared to the currency in the United Arab Emirates or in Saudi Arabia, which are kind of tied to the dollar. And because of the currency appreciation and because of the food price increase and the cost of living increases in the remittance recipient countries in Asia and everywhere else, there will be more flow of remittances from the migrants. So that is definitely going to be one reason. The other is there is increased migration flow migration flows into the Gulf region right now because of the construction boom. And because of those, I think we will continue to be surprised by the numbers. And the example, one recent example of that is the latest data for Bangladesh, which shows a 80% growth rate compared to a year ago.
And are those types of markets served by the traditional sort of big operators like MoneyGram and Western Union, or are they served by, kind of smaller local operators?
Actually, there is a large opportunity for the big MTOs, and they are already very active in that market. As you know, in those markets, Hawala was very popular. Hawala, Hundi, Fishin, whatever, Padala, whatever you call it. I mean, the informal channels were very popular. And there are a number of smaller players which are also doing very well in that part of the world. But the larger players have the name recognition and already have entered into partnerships with networks, like postal networks and the banking networks. So my sense is that there is a great market opportunity for them, and we will see a shift, large shift, from the smaller players to the bigger players in those markets.
And then, out of curiosity, how do you sort of reconcile your data, with, like, if you compare your data to, like, Western Union and such? I mean, they're certainly well into the sort of double-digit range? I mean, sort of, or at least MoneyGram sort of one, well into the sort of double-digit range, almost like in the 20% range in terms of, you know, what they've seen. And you're seeing 11, and you're saying, well, there's some that's kind of outside of those companies, but then they wouldn't be capturing that volume that's outside of the data that you record, right?
That's right. And also, we narrowly focus on remittances, personal remittances, and typically these are, you know, the migrant remittances, whereas they would be capturing also all kinds of retail payments for business purposes, for trade or investment, or for tourism purposes as well. Like, you know, somebody buys an
airline on a money transfer call. So, thank you very much. That's very helpful.
Dilip, I wanted to you made an interesting point about the domestic markets, especially in China and India, and I wanted to get your thoughts on maybe what are the largest domestic markets. Are those, besides the U.S., is China and India the next ones that probably have the biggest domestic market opportunities, or are there others as well?
Europe. I don't know how easy it is to send money within Europe. My sense is people are using the banking tool mostly, and there is a definite opportunity, you know, in Europe, in Russia, Brazil. But the big one is the two big ones are China and India. By far, they would, you know, China's internal migration data suggests about 200, you know, somewhere between 150 million to 200 million migrants, domestic migrants in China. That compares with about 191 million global migrant stock. In India, the number is also similar, like, you know, it's probably 100 million. We don't know. Nobody knows. And most of the remittances, domestic remittances in India are through the post office now. And post office charges about 5% for the money orders. That is moving into banking sector increasingly. And if there is a specialized money transfer facility available, then I think they would capture the market. So I understand many companies are getting into that now.
And I wanted to ask you maybe the role of banks, at least in the U.S. There haven't been too many banks that are really succeeding in capturing the money transfer market. If you look internationally, banks have had more success than here in the U.S. Do you believe that, at least in the United States, that we'll see a change at all? Are there any banks, in your opinion, that have an opportunity to capture some of the money transfer market share?
I kind of feel that the major international banks will never benefit in a tangible way from the remittance market. It just doesn't fit into their business model, and the remittance market, no matter how big it is too small compared to their overall volumes. So the top tier international banks will always talk about remittances the same way that they talk about microfinance or about climate change, but they will not really think of remittances as an interesting business model. They will pay attention to trade payments, and to that extent, the payment sector is very, you know, important to them. But the personal remittance market is not important. And the hope in that case is for the second tier, or I don't know, you might call it the third tier banks, which are basically the national banks of the major remittance recipient countries. They will benefit a lot. And again, I don't want to name names, but, you know, you have the huge banks from India, China, Philippines, Mexico, Morocco, Kenya, Ghana, Russia, big time. These banks will benefit, and they are thinking of going global. So there will be competition among them. And again, of course, the competition probably is not very serious in some sense, because I think they will still be corridor specific. You know, Indian banks will probably have an advantage in the Indian corridor. So that's what I see. I don't really expect that the commercial banks of any sort of, you know, across the spectrum would be getting involved in remittances in a big way. So the competition to money transfer companies will not come from the banks. It will come from among themselves or from the informal players.
Anthony, can you see if our audience has any more questions?
And just as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star one on your touchtone telephone, and we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. And it appears we have no questions at this time.
Dilip, those are all the questions I had. I wanted to thank you very much for your time. This was very helpful and very informative. So thank you very much for taking the time to conduct this call with us.
Well, thank you, Karthik. We have posted the new migration and development brief on our website that has the latest data I mentioned. And thank you very much for listening to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
That does conclude today's conference. You may now disconnect.